Los Angeles. You're now tuned into Slauson Girl Speaks
with award-winning journalist and South Central native, Slauson Girl.
This is a safe space.
Yeah!
Celebrating authentic black expression.
Where Slauson Girl dives deep
into Los Angeles history,
politics, and news.
While discussing culture, race, and identity with carefully curated guests
to keep you open-minded in today's society.
No cap.
Follow Slauson Girl on all social media platforms and stream Slauson Girl Speaks on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
You don't want to miss this.
Although he barely slipped away from a life imprisonment for a nonviolent weed offense, Corvain does not view his experiences in a negative light. He says that he feels God took him through this experience to make him a stronger person and so he could be around longer for his family. How does a man facing life in prison for weed remain optimistic about his case? After serving 9 years, Corvain is finally free and is here to talk to us about what he has been up to after his release from prison in January. Corvain, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty good.
Dope. So I'm really excited. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and speak to me today for my podcast. And I know that the people who follow my platform are like going to really like be juiced about this. So thanks again. And I'm really excited to talk to you, considering everything that you've been through, you know, receiving the life in prison for weed and then being, you know, granted clemency from Donald Trump. And it's even more interesting because you are also And it's even more interesting because you're also from LA. I guess where I want to start off is kind of like Corvain growing up in LA.
Right.
You know? Describe to us, like, if you could describe yourself in like 3 words as a young Corvain growing up in Los Angeles, what would those 3 words be?
I would say like eager, you know what I mean? Fashionable and having like a lot of courage. You got to have a lot of courage to say like, you know, growing up on the East Side or growing up in anybody's hood and say, I'm following my path. I'm not joining your gang. I'm not banging. I'm not doing that. I'm just following my path in life on what I want to do. And it's really harder if you call yourself like trying to be fly. You know, I think it's a little harder.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Why? Because you have to like get money to maintain that flyness or?
You got to get money and then you need some respect to come. It's not the money, it's the respect needs to come with that because you can't just, you're like showboating in their hood. You feel me? So if you're having all these nice cars and you're having this and that, you're doing that in their hood on their time where they said they laid the law down over here for that. You see what I'm saying? So
right.
It's going to be a little more test that's going to come your way. And you got to get A's on your test in order to keep going.
Right. But it's crazy, though, because it's like it's also your community, too, though, if you grow up there, but you didn't necessarily join the gang. Right. But, you know, at least you understand.
It's your community, too. But they feel like they're the security and they're protecting the community.
Right.
You know, so when they feel that they're protecting, the gang is protecting the community and the gang is protecting the surrounding of the community. You know, they have certain like, you know, Mexican gangs that make all the liquor stores that are not Mexican. You have to pay taxes to the Mexican mafia to have your store over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like even if we are filming like these movies and stuff like that, like, the gang members are going to pull up, you know.
Right.
So when they're filming Love & Hip Hop, I got people that do the security for Love & Hip Hop in different shows and training day. People had to pay the gangs over there to film those,
right,
you know, those scenes in their hood like that. So,
right,
you know, it's different politics that come with living in LA.
Right. Definitely. So You say you were eager. Well, that was one of the words that you said. What would you say that motivated you the most in life?
Just to overcome poverty, just growing up, y'all sleep on the couch at your grandmother's house. You see what I'm saying? So you're like, damn, I can't sleep on the couch anymore, mm-hmm. Or the rats and roaches or whatever it is that you have to overcome seeing mm-hmm. growing up. And you're like, I need to really overcome this. I need better for myself.
Right.
So, and better for my family and better for my kids. Mm-hmm. So you just don't want them to go through the same struggles and the same obstacles that you had to go through as far as having to break the law in order to do these type of things, to overcome this. So I think that's what made me the most eager. The most eagerness is like, do you want to be over here on this east side where it's really rough, or do you want to go walk your dog, or, just mm-hmm. in case you want to walk to the store without getting banged on, mm-hmm. Or without, going through the rigmarole of, where, Benz's are normal, or where everything is normal, where that's not, such a sore thumb, or it's not such a big deal.
Right. Okay. Where would you say you felt the most like love and support growing up? Who were some of the people in your family or your extended family where you found like the most refuge as a youngster?
I gotta go with my grandmother first. Right. I mean, my grandmother raised me, so I gotta go with her. Rest in peace, Elise Dillard. And another rest in peace is my uncle. My uncle showed me a lot of love. Like my uncle, Alan Keith. He died too while I was in jail, but he kind of, by him taking me to like all the, basketball and football, like that opened a different door. Even though my dad took me to wrestling matches, and my dad's amazing, and I had a lot of stuff growing up, but to spend the most time with me, I would say my uncle, as far as, learn how to tie your shoe, learn how to be a man, learn this, how you put a condom on, stuff like that. Now my dad gave me the condom, but he didn't show me how to put it on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like you got to kind of, it's different stages at 12, 13 years old. You can give them to me, but how do you really properly put this thing on mm-hmm. where I want, to be safe? So, you got to look back at things like that, that'll stick in your head forever.
Right.
And my granny, rest in peace to my granny too, as well. I lost a lot of people when I was just in jail, but she exposed me to church. You feel what I'm saying? So that changed me. So that's why I'm real big. I don't go to sleep without praying. I don't wake up without praying. I don't do anything. Even if I'm doing an interview, I'm gonna pray to see how the interview goes, So she showed me how the faith thing worked, how to pay your tithes on, if you made $10,000, you need to give up $1,000. If you made $100,000, you need to give up $10,000. And it'll grow and grow and grow more. And it's really a proven fact. And, put the money in the right places. So she showed me that. And then, by her working with Harrison Ford and Melissa Ford, that showed me like real money at a young age. So when you see real money at a young age, you're kind of like, okay, this is what Mahalan looks like. You feel what I'm saying? Like, this is what the real goal is. Like, you find out, like, he's worth $100 million. He has on Prolinks and a fucking Toyota 4Runner. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so you see the difference between, rich white people and black people in the hood that have money by growing up. My dad hustled with, Freeway Rick, Harry O, and all the, you got to see their money growing up and see my dad have 4 or 5 cars. And, and you see them, they have cars, Freeway weighed $1 million a day, and here you go, it's super rich. So you see the ghetto rich, but it's different from their rich. You see what I'm saying? So, that changed my game a little bit.
Okay, definitely. How was your relationship with your dad growing up?
I mean, I kind of got all the things that I wanted as far as but that just made a new addiction. So I don't want to wear old shoes no more because I never had old shoes growing up. You feel what I'm saying? So I don't want to wear old clothes because mm-hmm. he made sure that we had clothes and jewelry. He made sure that we had everything that we had. Mm-hmm. So it changed my game on to that's the way I show love. Mm-hmm. So I think show love is giving you a gift. You feel what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. I think that's how I show love now, because I was showing love for my dad, my gifts. So mm-hmm. that's why I show my kids love.
Okay. So let's talk about your, what is a social impact brand?
Where I got two phones, where it's one phone, I got tons and tons of messages right now that I have to re-answer because they're living long messages, but they're all from people that's in prison, mm-hmm. right? So there's things that they need done. And let's just say I was in jail, right? Like just yesterday, that just cost us $100. He wanted some flowers to go to his girlfriend for her birthday. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I understand because I used to do that for my girlfriend when I was here. So it's like now I'm on the other side of the fence and I've set this bar in jail where you need to send your girl flowers from a jail instead of just, you know, trying to surprise her and stuff like that. So now that's became like the cool thing. So now they're asking me to do it, you know? So I had to remember to call Pro Flowers and call and do this and stuff like that. So, you know, they need glasses. We got the Parker glasses. And now, you know, he wants some more glasses, some different ones. And we have a program where if you go on 40tons.co right now, where we just put on our 40tons brand, where we want them to create their own business and they can grow with us. Right now, you know, Luke sold 25 shirts and Parker sold 10 in this part, you know. So we sent them all their money that they made off the shirt. Let's say the shirt is, this is an arbitrary number. So let's just say the shirt's $30 and it's $16 to print and get to the customer, right? That's our cost. So that means you made $14. So if you sold 10 shirts, get $140 that we're going to put on your account, you know. And as we grow as a company and get bigger, hopefully they'll sell 1,000 shirts and hopefully they'll sell 500 shirts. And hopefully we can help them raise money on our platform and they have their own business. The more they promote their t-shirts, the more their family wants to support them. They can wear a shirt, get supported, and they can still get money on their books and we can hopefully have them save money. And so when they get out, they can know how business works.
That's like a really super dope concept.
Yeah.
And hats off to you. And actually, I want to kind of like go a little bit further into like the people that help you with 40 tons. It's not just yourself. You are the brand ambassador, period. Right. But yeah, like talk to me about kind of like your co-founder as well.
Okay. Well, I was in prison. I used to wake up to the newspaper clipping of the 40 tons. So me, Evelyn, and Italia, we all went to trial together and it's a big thing. It's a big trial of October 2013, right? It's a newspaper clipping of the 40 tons. So I used to wake up to that every day and say like, okay, well, how am I going to turn this into a plus? You know what I mean? So I was trying to think of ways to do it. And I said, I want to call it 40 tons because the conspiracy was 40 tons.
Mm-hmm.
And when going over that, you know, you got backlash of L'Oreal and Anthony, who was helping me build the actual motto out for the company.
Nice.
We're saying, oh, no, that might be a slap in the face. And that might cause, the name might cause, you know, a little friction by doing that. But I'm like, no, that's what I'm going with. You feel what I'm saying? Like, it's not, I can't see it no other way but to be 40 tons. And we all agreed upon it. And we're here today with the brand, you know.
Okay, nice, definitely. So how does it feel to, like, go from sitting in prison, having a life conviction for weed, and then to now be on the other side of that, having your 40 tons brand, doing the work that you're doing to raise awareness about those that are still incarcerated. Like, you know, you're on a total other side of the spectrum when it comes to weed, cannabis. Like, how does that feel?
Things feel dope, but I got like a long way to go, you know, and mm-hmm. there's more things that I want to do. And, you know, I want to get pardoned, you know, I want to get off of parole, you know, mm-hmm. so that I can have more opportunities. It blocks a lot of opportunities and it blocks a lot of, you know, things. You can't be around plant touching. You can't be around a plant. You can't do this. You can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just so many lists of things that you can't do. Mm-hmm. I can't even smoke. You know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's lists of things that you can't do that blocks you from opportunities. But, yeah, it's more that I want to do. You know, we're starting in Hawthorn. Hopefully next month we're building it out right now where we're going to have like a job fair and give all felons jobs. You feel what I'm saying? So we're trying mm-hmm. to start that. we're going to go on tour and have, like, you know, expungement clinics around the world, you know. So we're just starting, we're building out, and we're going to, when we hit the ground, we're going to hit the ground running. We're not going to, like, sit and play. We're talking to city councils and mayors and stuff right now to get it laid out so we can really help, you know what I mean, like, help in the areas that's really needed help in. So that's the main thing. Your brand is going to grow off what you do. So if we do things in the community, you're really helping the brand grow on itself. So,
right.
You know, the name is already official and stuff like that. So now you just need to build out the brand and make the brand just grow worldwide.
Mm, definitely. So you've already held an expungement clinic in South Central since you've been out. You know, you've been moving and shaking, you know, you've been moving around a lot. But when it comes to locally in the community in South Central, you've, again, the expungement clinic, you've partnered with to do, like, coding classes at the Big House. Like, yeah. You know, what besides, you know, how you mentioned brand awareness in a sense, you know, but what also motivates you to, like, you know, do events like coding for kids and these expungement clinics?
I think it all started, the coding really, really hit me pretty hard when everyone was shooting for Vanity Fair. Mm. And the lady said, cut for 1 second to see that an airplane is going to, she looked at her phone and she knew that an airplane would fly by in the next 15 seconds. Mm. You know what I mean? Just by her phone. She knows exactly what time the airplane is going to fly because we're shooting outside. So if we were shooting outside and you don't need any noise, you can say cut because in 15 seconds, you're getting a click on your phone that the airplane is going to be flying over. So at that point, I already knew that the curve needs to start where the kids need to learn some new stuff. But that's when it was really like, hold up, wait a minute. You know what I mean? Like, shit's real. Like, the phone tells you what time a plane is going to fly over. You feel what I'm saying? So if your kids is not, like, in front of the curve, they're really going to get left behind. You feel what I'm saying? So I just want the best for my daughters. You feel what I'm saying? And everybody else's daughter in the hood, you know, that they can make the next phone or they can make the next microphone or whatever it is. Like how Lil Wayne had paid $100,000 for the moving studio. Mm-hmm. Somebody thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that thought of that didn't pay $100,000. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So they thought of something that you can sell for $100,000, which the person that makes it maybe only made it for $5,000. Mm-hmm. So you might get a $95,000 profit. You know what I mean? So it's just all on what area you want to be in life.
Okay, for sure. So you mentioned that you also want to get a pardon, a full pardon. Yeah. You were granted clemency?
Can
we talk clemency a little bit about
clemency and pardons
that?
Are two different things. Some people think that I, like, have a pardon and I don't. Mm. I have a clemency, which is they're just commuting your sentence to say that you've served enough time for the crime that you've committed. A pardon, you're totally forgiven forever. It will never be on your jacket ever again in life. You're exonerated, period, from the whole crime. Mm-hmm. It's like it never happened.
Right.
You did the time, but the crime never happened on paper.
Okay.
You know, so you'll be able to start your life off properly, which Biden can do. He can just say, hey, all the marijuana people that just got out, we can just give you guys a pardon. It just takes them 1 second to sign it, you know. So,
okay.
You know, praying for something like that to happen.
Okay, definitely. Joe Biden, get on your day job. Well, that would be like his evening kind of night job.
Yeah, it's a night job.
Okay,
or
for sure.
Kamala can do it. Hey. You know?
Somebody.
She can put it in his ear.
Well, I'm sure that will work itself out for sure. You know, I want to talk a little bit about, I was watching an interview that you did with your friend from back in the day.
Oh, yeah, Lil Keith.
About vegan.
That's,
you know, over the vegan food. Yeah. And I was really moved by, which is kind of why I led with that in the intro, you know, how you were saying that even though you had got this life sentence that you were not, like, you never really, like, accepted that. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like,
it's like once you accept it, or what it is you see other people that have accepted it in prison. So you're like, damn, you know what I mean? Or you see a guy like this one guy, like he used to hang with Russell Simmons and a couple other people, and he was fly back in New York back in his day. You know what I mean? Like, but he just let himself go because he accepted the life sentence that this is where he was going to end up for the rest of his life. So once you accept it, your body is going to carry it, and you're going to carry it on your face, and you're going to wear it, you know? So I never wanted to wear it. You know, I never wanted my kids to see that. I never wanted my family to see that. I never wanted anyone to see me wearing, like, you're washed up forever, and this is where your last album is going to be. You know what I mean? Like, your last show is in here in prison. So if you never wear it and you believe it, it's, that's where the walk by faith, not by sight really steps in at, because now you have to put the what it says on paper that you're going to die in here into actually into your footwork and say, no, this is not the end. This is actually the beginning. I'm actually rebirthing myself in here. You know, so I made sure that every picture I sent home, that I'll keep my head up and I'll still keep my swag and have some demeanor about myself.
Definitely. Okay, so, you know, you're extremely optimistic, but, you know, you're still in prison, right? You know, and it's a violent place.
Very violent.
Can you talk a little bit about, like, what are some of the things that you remember the most that kind of stands out to you as you, whenever you would think back to your time in prison?
Well, I've seen 8 murders and 7 suicides. You know what I mean? So we're not talking about all the attempts that I've seen. But the thing that I say will just stick out the most was people, you know, like them knocking on your door telling you that your granny's dead or your uncle's dead, or, you know, like, you know, those kind of things you're not going to forget when the chaplain comes to your door. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be able to attend. You know, those are huge. You know, the missing, like, you know, my mother and father had their 60th together. That was huge. My sister put that together. That was huge in our family for them to want to do that together with their significant others. Daddy-daughter days with the kids, you know, missing first days of school. I'm really in touch with my kids. Just a lot, you know, it's a lot of stuff that you miss. You know, it's mm-hmm. just a lot of stuff that you miss. And, you know, getting those denial letters as you fight, it's just boom, now you're denied. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. those things can haunt you at night, you know.
Well, I'm sorry that, you know, you lost your granny and your uncle in there, and even also having to see such traumatic things like that as people losing their lives or taking their lives, you know. One thing that I wanted to ask you about is, so I had an ex, and he spent a lot of time in prison, and he would talk to me about just, like, he would talk to me about a lot, but one of the things that really was, like, bothersome for me, and you spent time out of state prisons or in state, California?
I started at Atwater. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're kind of, like, popular, you feel what I'm saying? And kind of, like, they will say, like, you have too much influence on the yard. You feel what I'm saying? Around. So, like, they move you around because mm-hmm. if the tiny load, once you got the young people under control, you can kind of say, hey, go do this. You know, like, that becomes dangerous. So they get you away, and then they send me to Louisiana. So it's like Louisiana, Pollock is like the punishment place. You know what I mean? Like, okay, you fucked up. You had it good over here. Mm. Now we're going to send you over here where everyone that's coming to Pollock mm-hmm. is coming from the smooth program or coming from being in the hole for fentanyl. So you're on a yard with a bunch of fuck-ups. You feel what I'm saying? So it's the place for the where you're, go here for 3 years with fuck ups real fast, and then we can work your way back this way. You see what I'm saying? Right. So you had to go deal with that, and it's a whole nother animal. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. you're going to really see all that tough talk and all that time of talk. You're mm-hmm. They want to put an address on that shit. You see what I'm saying? So a lot of that is going to get tested, and you're going to see what's really going on with you. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because now you're not with nobody that you know.
Right.
You know, just not know, your homies are not here, mm-hmm. you know, so no one cares about they think that they're him from where they're from. You feel what I'm saying? Right. So they can really care less about what you got going on. So it's going to be, you're going to go through it. You know what I mean? You're going to go through it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll frame the question within that. So I was really bothered by what he would say in terms of like the race politics in prison and how, you know, like things is really like divided by race within California prisons, you know.
California prisons is really racist. It's one of the racist. It's damn near like you pissed, like it's back to Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King. What did you do this for? Where they have a white pisser or a black pisser? You know, it's like, you know, it's really, really, really racist. And what I can say is that I found out that towards the end of my bid that not only did I have a lot of respect, that people respected me in there, but I had a lot of love. Because on the day the BET special came on, you know, we were on lockdown, but everybody wanted to see it. But in order to see it, you might, your cell might be down there. So you can't actually see it if it's only on our TV right here. And then our TV is faced this way. Mm-hmm. And there's only six TVs on the wall, and every race has a TV, or every car has a TV. Like if you're LA, that might be a West Coast TV or a Blood TV, or a GD TV or a DC TV, you know. So the Mexicans and white boys was like, no, hell no, we fuck with TV. You feel what I'm saying? So they put it on their TV. They played. This is like some historical shit in the feds. You feel what I'm saying? Like you can really get killed by putting, especially on a white TV. You know what I mean? Like you put some black shit. They won't even stop on VH1. You feel what I'm saying? So let alone you put a whole 2-hour program of a black dude on the TV. You feel what I'm saying? So, you know, that was kind of like huge.
In Louisiana.
Yeah, this was in Louisiana, Paul. It doesn't matter where you're at. I don't care if you're in Canaan. I don't care if you're at Victor.
So the race
thing is serious. Still,
even in different states. I thought it was just maybe California has some weird.
It doesn't matter because the feds is all one system.
Right. Okay.
Now, in the state of California prisons, it's really serious. You know what I mean? Like, it's triple more serious than it is in the feds. Because we're in California where it's more beef. But now a Texas Mexican might say nigga and he thinks he's black. You know what I mean? Or mm-hmm. Now they got the Texas syndicates and different, you know, they sag. And, you know, you got the North Angels that's in Oakland. You know what I mean? That's, they hair ducktails and wear their fades.
And they cool with black people, right?
And they cool with black people. So
but
every situation is going to be different.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sucks.
Yeah.
Well, we all can't get along. Rest in peace, Rodney King.
Yeah.
So I know that you mentioned like the reason that you need the pardon is because everything is, you know, you're forgiven in a sense for everything. It's not on your record and things like that. And at the moment, it's kind of like, you know, there's little hindrances. You know, you're still like moving and shaking and, you know, working and planting seeds, but you can't be around like weed and things like that, you know.
Right.
However, you were able to do a collaboration with Cookies to have like your own strand.
So that kind of started when I was like already in prison.
Okay.
So we call that like the Tupac deal. You know what I mean? Like they kind of got me cheap, got me on the Tupac deal, because if you're in jail, like who doesn't want cookies, you know, with their face on it, you know what I mean? And then boom, I come home, you know, so, you know, shout out to Cookies. I think they did a dope thing with the packaging and everything is dope with that. And I think that was dope that they did that. Yeah.
Super dope. You're also going to be on parole for the next 10 years.
Right.
And so, yeah, like talk a little bit about that. Like, how does it feel to still kind of be tied to this, you know, to the prison industrial complex? In a sense, despite, you know, you're released, so you're not there, but there's still like these like tethers to the system in a sense because of the probation, the parole.
Yeah, I'd say that I'm trying to, you know, fill out for early termination like in the first 2 years. You know, so just keep doing the work. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I try to not to, because it'll stress you out, you know. Mm. So I try to just don't do anything that'll get me in trouble,
right.
You know, and stay focused on the goals. And as I work and can complete different goals and different things that I'm trying to obtain, I think the time will just come because I can't stop the time. You know what I mean? Then you'll look up, boom, and the time will be gone. And then you can say, hey, I'll fill out it. And then you'll have a list of things of why I need to get off. Here's, you know, hopefully by then I've done 100 expungement clinics and I did 100 job fairs. And you see what I'm saying? So here's what I've done. This is what I've done for the community. This is the work that I put in. You know, I'm ready to get off now. Mm-hmm. So just stay focused on your goal. If you look behind you, it's nothing but dust. So just keep getting into the end zone. Worry about the end zone. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, score the touchdown first.
Right. Yeah. So have you thought about, like, what you would want your legacy to be? Or are you kind of just, you know, planting your seeds?
I want to like, at least 100,000 foot growth before, you know, before this is all said and done. You know, leave that to my kids. Something that's going to keep growing forever, you know, and, you know, where in a minute you got to understand, like, the big boys are about to get in the game. You know, like Rite Aids and CVSs. Mm. And once they get, weed is really legal. You feel what I'm saying? You know, you got Rite Aid and Walmart ringing up from you. You feel what I'm saying? Like, it's going to be the numbers are going to be a lot different in the next 5 years. So you got to think of the age your kids will be at that time. What do you want for them? You know, so, you know, I talked to Freeway the other day. He's getting a 40,000 foot grow. You know, I was just with some guys last night. They're like, hey, we're getting an 80,000 foot grow. So I was like, oh, shit, I need 100,000 foot grow. Yeah. You know, you got to up what you want in life. You know what I mean? You got to up it a little farther. You know what I mean?
Right. This is a side note, but maybe you can put in a good word for me for Freeway Rick, because I have a personal quarrel as a crack baby. Just saying, you know.
Okay.
Not a quarrel. It'll be a nice conversation. Yeah. But, you know, I think that, like, you know.
Yeah, my mom was clean for 28 years. She was on crack. Yeah. Mm.
Shouts out to moms.
Yeah, definitely. Moms cleaned it up. Yeah. I'm proud of her.
Definitely. Yeah. That's important. Yeah. Maybe I'll visit my mom one day. She hit me up on Facebook a few years ago. Yeah. But I would like to talk to Freeway Rick Ross one day. Super side note.
Yeah. I got his number. We'll figure that out.
So your daughters are, you know, very important to you. We can all tell.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'll ask you, like, how does it feel being a father? A black man, 2021, fathering two young girls.
I think it's dope. You know, man, I think I want to make it, you know, and then if you're in my crew and you're not doing your fatherly duties, like, you're not in my crew then. You feel what I'm saying? Like, you know, that's, like, big to be in my crew. You have to be doing your shit or we don't play around. So, like, last night, she had to have, like, a double Dutch contest, like, for Nickelodeon or something she was doing, and I had to wait 2 hours. You see what I'm saying? Like, you know, so I was like, man, trying to watch the game. So I just went around the corner and watched the game. But, you know, I just want to make it where, you know, being a dad is cool, and, you know, and be a dad, like, that's cool. Like, you feel what I'm saying? Like, right. You don't have to stop who you are because you're a dad. Like, you feel what I'm saying? Like,
right.
People think, like, being the dad is some kind of way stopping them from doing what they're doing, you know? So I just want to make it, like, that's the cool thing. Like, that's the end style thing. Like, you know, like, be a dad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, you know, do that for your kids. Like, if you can do that for yourself, or you can do that for at the club or whatever it is that you're hyped up about, you know, change their life and change their thing. Just like the other day, my homeboy was shooting a video. You feel what I'm saying? So I went and got the Lambo truck, but I got it for my daughter. You feel what I'm saying? So she can drive the Lambo truck. We have seen enough videos.
Wait, how old is your daughter?
She's 15. Yeah.
Okay, shouts out to your daughter.
Yeah. No, but, you know, you're just so used to seeing the same thing, though. The people, they're standing around the car or this and that. You know what I mean? Like, that has to be played out at some point.
That part.
You know what I mean? Like, it has to be some other shit. You know, so I'm like, I think it would be dope if we just let the kids roll it. You feel what I'm saying? Like, you know, change the game. Let what you touch, you can achieve. You have to touch it first, you know? So somebody had to let me touch. You know, my only tally grass and PC used to do this to me, you know? So he used to throw me 850s and different. Next thing you know, I was in Beamers and Benzes. You feel what I'm saying? Like, but I had to touch it first to know that that's what you want, or, you know, to know your standards.
Definitely. Let's talk about, like, you know, you received this clemency from Donald Trump. I guess we would have to shout Ivanka Trump.
You definitely got to shout Ivanka out.
Okay, yeah, let's talk a little bit about her. She was the person that took your story to her dad or helped?
Yeah, she took the story to her dad. And she's the one who called my mom, too. And they wrote me a couple weeks ago. But she had like a soft spot because I had the two daughters, you know, so they said she got the soft spot for it. And that was just a life-changing experience. You feel what I'm saying? And I got to do the best with it and, you know, put it on her father's heart to change it and to sign the thing at the last second, you know. So we're talking at 11:30. My name wasn't even on the list, you know, so. It's just a moment just in history that I'll just never forget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, shout out to them. I think they did a good job.
So, how was it like, man? You know, Donald Trump basically, you know, he's labeled as just like, you know, the super racist KKK guy or whatever, you know, and you knew that like, you basically only had this window of opportunity if he left office and didn't sign the paper that you would have to wait another presidential election. And
which you got to wait to the end of their term. You know, it's not like tomorrow Biden's signing clemency's tomorrow.
Right.
You know, they're signing this type of stuff when they leave office. Now, what if he does 8 years? You see what I'm saying? So now you got to wait 8 years just to play your lottery ticket, though.
Mm.
You know, it's a lottery ticket that you're playing. So you have to be thankful for it. And then another thing is that always just knew, first of all, he hates a snitch. You know what I mean? Like, Trump hates a snitch. You see what I'm saying? Like, he proven that. And not only thing did he proved that all the people that stayed down. You see what I'm saying? Like, he came and got all his homies that stayed down. You see what I'm saying? Like, you know, the ones that stayed down, he went right back and got them before he left. You know, so I was just like, he ran it. He was running the White House like he was running the mob. You know what I mean? Like, he sent people into the White House, you know, into the Capitol. It's just, you know, it was just the way that he was running shit. He was running like he was in the streets, you know. So mm-hmm. I thought that was in my benefit as well. You know what I mean? That he liked to stand up people.
Mm-hmm.
He liked the people that had the daughter. And he hates a snitch. I mean, he hates them, you know. So a snitch, you're out of there. I mean, he fired the most people ever in the White House, ever.
Right.
As soon as you show one sense of disloyalty, you're out of there. So. All that wasn't a benefit, but he was still going through what he was going through. Mm-hmm. You know, we had 150,000 signatures, so we had a big push.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to all the organizations that, you know, helped the push. You feel me? And it just got crucial towards the end when he had all this stuff going on with the, you know, the voter thing, this, the Capitol, the tax evasion, you know, so to care about little old me from the east side, San Pedro and 70th, you feel what I'm saying? To sign a paper and care about me when you got all this stuff going on, you could easily just said, hey, I'm out of here. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, but to even put your pen and sign it before you leave, you know, that's pretty big.
Right. Definitely. That's huge. Yeah. But again, I'm trying to put this within the context of he's the super racist guy. Like, how does it feel, you black man from the east side? Like, you know the stand down and the snitch thing, but did the race thing ever come into context?
I didn't really like focus on it too mm-hmm. much because I looked at more people. I looked at it like, okay, well, what if they found that Biden actually called us monkeys and West called it that we should be monkeys in a cage.
Mm-hmm. And a crime bill.
And then signed the crime bill that got us all in these predicaments that were in the hood, right?
Right.
Then I seen everybody going Biden, Biden, Biden. I'm like, damn, why are they going Biden, Biden, Biden? And they're showing you that he's West called. One thing that I did see about Trump that everything he did was blunt. You know what I mean? He wasn't doing nothing like behind our backs or doing nothing, you know, undercover. Like, if he say, fuck you, it's fuck you to the whole world in the middle of a fucking camera on a big stage, you know? So I never really see him show no underhand. But when they showed all the underhand on Biden, I was like, whoa. You know what I mean? It was a lot of underhand, backbiting stuff. You feel what I'm saying? Like, I don't really like backbiting. If it's, you know, just fuck me, just say fuck me in my face. You know, I could feel a little better part about it. I just felt like all his stuff was blunt and in your face.
No, I agree. Hey, it's a weird situation out here in the world. So, you know, you mentioned the petition with 150,000 signatures that people had signed pushing for you to be released. You had support from people all over the world. And how did that feel as a, you know, again, Black guy from South Central to see that people beyond, you know, like gender, class, race were like interested in wanting to see justice for you?
In jail, it makes you, you get this fake, like, you know, I guess jailhouse celebrity feel about it, you know what I mean? Because you're getting letters and, you know, they got the BT thing going on. And then I was like on the cover of the New York Times on the 29th. So you're getting that kind of feel, but it's bringing actually more pressure. You know what I mean? Because it's bringing more pressure. Because now you're like, damn, are you going to get this push again? You know what I mean? Like, you know, did they push for you this time, but or is everybody, if you don't get the clemency from Trump, is that just going to let the gas out of everybody? You know, is they're going to, is it going to dilute everybody? Like, you know, is your second push for Biden going to be the same as the push that you just had for Trump? You know, are you going to be on BET? Are you going to be on this? Are you going to, you know, are they going to forget about you? You know, so it actually brought actually more pressure, actually, to tell you the truth. Yeah.
Okay. But everything worked out in there. So
yeah, yeah, it was dope. Yeah.
Mostly everything. Still pushing for that full pardon from Biden. So let's talk a little bit about some current like stuff that's happening, like just in the culture. You know, weed is just like this huge conversation. And then we had an incident where we had, you know, our young queen, Sha'Carri Richardson.
One of the fastest people in the world.
In the world.
Not just in this, we're talking in the world.
Right.
Yeah. That's a big statement.
Right. She, yeah, fastest young woman in the world, competing for the Olympics this year. Was about to head off to Tokyo. And they basically, first the whole story came out. They were like, yeah, a source from the Olympics, tell us. Like, that's how it came out, whatever. But yeah, she, I guess, failed some drug test or whatever. And now they're telling her that she has to wait until like next year or whenever it is again.
Yeah, I think, I think she can get into the next one like towards the end of the year.
Okay.
But to me, they put cannabis on like a biggest stage in the world. You know what I mean? They actually promoted cannabis pretty big doing that. Mm. And what they showed was, this is the fastest woman in the world. So any kind of bad stigma that you can have about cannabis, now you can kind of throw that out the window.
Right.
You know, because now you have, you know, you got Alex Caruso just played in championship basketball. You got her doing it. You know, so if these people are actually consuming cannabis, and she's the fastest woman in the world, you're actually making people want to do cannabis more and want to follow in the footsteps of people that are so successful, that's showing no pain or no nothing wrong with them. They're actually exceeding the best that you can in life and competing in the Olympics. If you know that, how much you're going to have to go through and how many, you got to beat the person from France, beat the person from here, beat the person. You know, yeah, you're beating people from all around the world.
Right.
You know, so I think they put it, they didn't even know that they were doing that. I think they killed the stigma of marijuana by doing that, you know? So it's like it's a win and a lose. I hate that she has to like lose for the culture, you know, to get bigger. But to me, I could call out Al Harrington because she told me that Evelyn told me to call Al Harrington. I was like, I text him immediately. Like, if you're not trying to get her and be the sole person for Viola right now, like, you're kind of like crazy.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, if I have you have a brand, you need to, you know, be able to reach out to her and have her as your spokesperson, give her all the weed in the world. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Definitely. But true. But we don't know if she wants to be promoting herself as that, though. That might just be a, you know,
I'm
her mom passed.
Yeah, yeah. If it's a time pass, then it's a time pass. But if this is something that you do,
right,
and you smoke weed,
right,
and you, it makes you drive, run faster, or it's something that you have to deal with after you're coming off this big stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot, you know, even on these little stages and going through what we're going through, it's still a stigma of this was a big day, it was a big event, or when we had Harlem Nights, it was a big event where, you know, it can drive you to smoking, to where she has to perform in front of the whole entire United States.
Right.
And she has the whole United States on her back where she's running for our country. So you don't know what she's going with in the room when the door closes, when she has to get back to her room, when she needs to smoke her blunt to calm her nerves down.
Right.
From having to have the whole world dependent on her to win. You know, her family and the whole United States are dependent on her to win. So if that is the problem, then I think she needs to, you know, be a spokesperson for marijuana and find what brand that's dope that, you know, she can be a spokesperson for, and hopefully it's 40 tons.
Okay, so Shikari, reach out to 40 tons. Definitely. That's the second one. So, 40 tons and yourself have been able to partner with different brands and gain more exposure through like their platforms, such as like you did a conversation through Weed Maps with like Talib Kweli and some other people like from Dead Prez. And like, how does it feel to be able to, you know, use the exposure of these like cannabis brands to share your story and brand?
I think that's like, without the bridge, I think that's like the dopest part, that the cannabis community has showed so much love and support. That it's like, wow, okay, like, I like being a part of this whole new little world, you know what I mean, that we're in. Like, you know, it's like when you have to see where a spot is and say, like, I want that spot, you know? So I was telling Evelyn that we want to be cannabis royalty.
So in order, that's how you already are, you know what I mean? So in order
to do that, you have to claim the spot, take it, and then act it out, you know what I mean? And actually play the part of that, you feel what I'm saying? So that's just something that's like, hey, let's do it. The spot's open for it. They don't have like, you know, a couple in the industry, and they don't have somebody that's actually been through the whole legacy market. And we want to make it where, you know, the legacy people, they're the people that are supposed to be running the industry, you know? So that's why I like that New York is getting in front of the curve, that they're not in front out of here. Like, you know, you maybe can maybe name 5 or 6, 10 spots that are owned by actual ex weed dealers that's out here. You know, I mean, that's horrible. Those numbers are horrible. Those numbers need, in New York, they're trying to get in front of the curve where 51% of it's supposed to be social equity or supposed to own. If you got a weed case and you were selling weed, you're supposed to have first dibs on in these dispensaries, on in these shops. You know, so hopefully I get around the curve and hopefully we'll be right there, you know, when it drops.
Okay, for sure, for sure. So I want to touch on something you mentioned real quick. It was like, 70th and San Pedro.
Yeah, that's my grandmother's house.
I made a
comment. They sold it while I was gone, too. I just, you know, like when they sell it when you're gone, and I can't stop the sale because I'm in jail, obviously, it's kind of like, you know, it takes a part of you, like you're kind of not from over here no more. You know what I mean? Like when you're from over there, you can pull up over there and you have somewhere to go.
Right.
Not just go to the liquor store. You know what I mean? Like, I'm used to pulling up over there all the time.
Right.
You park your car in the front and you go in the house because I'm from over here. You feel what I'm saying? So, you know, it takes a part of you where you kind of feel like, okay, yeah, that's the first thing I need to do when I get a big check. You know what I mean? Like, go buy that back. You know what I mean? Like, we need that back. You feel what I'm saying? Like, because it says it in the will to not sell it, you know, so.
What?
Yeah.
And, oh, man. Yeah. It said follow the directions.
Yeah,
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Did you ever used to go to that barbershop right there on the corner? The black
Brother John's. Yeah, that's my people. Yeah, Brother John's is my people.
So do they still own the spot?
Yeah, Brother John's still owns it. His son owns it. Yeah.
His son, I
want to stop by and check my, like, yeah. So I'm proud of him. He kept that, you know, it's been over 40 years.
That's like one of the only black businesses in that area.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's definitely salute to them for sure.
Yeah.
I had wrote a comment on your page because I was like, oh, you posted the that liquor store on
Marty's.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, my dad used to have me selling candy in Ramona's for years.
I'm so sure it took me back to Ramona's. Yeah.
Right.
Ramona's been there for some years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shout out to Ramona's. The story behind their business is really inspiring.
They finally got black people working in Ramona's. So I was nice to see. I never seen that growing up.
Oh, yeah, not growing up. But, yeah, they do, especially the one on Crenshaw. But, I mean, it's Crenshaw. Yeah, so it's kind of like, you know. All right, cool. So we got about, like, 15 minutes left. And I just want to make sure. Oh, this is what I did want to touch on. So we actually have Miss Evelyn here. She, you know, she can't be on camera right now, but we are going to do a follow-up, you know, so that she give her space to share her story, exactly. Her journey, actually. And so, yeah, I, you know, going back to wanting to be cannabis royalty, like, I definitely see that being planted, you know what I'm saying? That's how I perceive it in my head, but you know, the world got to catch on. So, like, we know that Evelyn was one of your co-defendants, you know, and I had seen a photo. I mean, you talk about it, you know, often, but like, you know, just how she didn't like tell on you, things like that or whatever.
And that's hard in this era. That's like really rare. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I lost all the friends that I grew up with, you know what I mean? Like, by them corroborating against both of us, actually, you know? So it's just, you know, that's rare. You know what I mean? Like, that's something that does not happen in this day and age. It's like, that's the new thing. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know what I mean? I'm like, damn, that's kind of weird because when I grew up, you know, I seen people get killed for that, you know? So it was like, you know, to actually see people get killed for that and people that do it so freely against both of us, you know what I mean? It was just like, wait a minute, is this a murder trial? Are we sitting over here or some weed? You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, you know, so it was like, you know, we sit next to each other at trial and we're sitting next to each other now, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
And how does that feel?
I think it feels dope. Sometimes it feels unreal, you know. Mm. Sometimes we got to touch each other to make sure that are we dreaming, you know, from the letters to making it just into the real thing. It's like it's a journey because, you know, if we don't live in the same state.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We live in the same state, but we don't live in the same city, I guess. Okay. You know, so, you know, that part I have to get accustomed to.
Right.
You know, I have to get accustomed to that because I'm really not used to that. Mm-hmm. So I'm getting accustomed to that. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes the build up better, but it's something to get accustomed to. It's something to get accustomed to because I'm used to coming home and every day my girl's there. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm used to that. So we're working on it.
We're working on it.
I think it's going to work pretty good.
Okay. Yeah. I think so too. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, do you think that like that kind of loyalty could ever be repaid?
You can't ever pay for it. You know what I mean? You can't ever repay that type of stuff. Like, that's something different. So it's like, I think, like, no matter what, that we're always going to always have that bond. I don't think no one can break that bond from us. Like, that bond right there is like, it's on a different level. So for I think we're always going to have that bond with us forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely, for sure. Well, salute to the Queen Evelyn, because yeah, we got the no snitching thrown around. Like, everybody's like a pro, and everybody's solid, nobody's cracking. I ain't saying nothing ever, like, you know. Yeah, but that's then not
be,
the case.
When they in that room, it'd be a different thing. Shout out to Natalia too. That's
oh yes,
defendant, you know,
shout out to Natalia.
You know what I mean? But they say it, so I'll be seeing people, and I wonder, you know, this is just me. They have songs like, you know, I'm a real nigga, or you know what I mean, or this and this and that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, you know, like, do the snitches, what do they say on that part? You know, do they still say on that part that they're a real nigga too? You feel what I'm saying? Like, you know, or do you stop that part because you know you're not a real nigga? Or do you still rap that part of the verse? You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's just a lot. You know, like, what do you do when they say the snitch part on the song? You know, things, thoughts like that go through my head, like, you know. it's easier than it looks. You know what I mean? Like, right. When you really sit in this room, they're going to really like, is life or death, or, you know, like, they're facing Evelyn, the entire face of 25 years, and I'm facing life. And to say, at this point, I'm still not going to snitch, even with this much time, you know, like, can you really handle that? You know what I mean? Can you really say that I'm not going to leave this studio for 25 years? Hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, this is the only place I'm going to be at is this studio. And then you're going to come out the road, it's still moving out there. They got flying cars and shit when you come home. You know?
Right.
So it's a lot to handle.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say are some of, like, the qualities that help you to stay grounded now as you, you know, you've been released 6 months or so. You have, the world is your oyster, basically, you know, sky's the limit. What are some of the things and that you would say would, like, keep you grounded and focused?
I think the main thing is I like the prison phone and still talking to people in prison to know, like, wait a minute, you don't want no parts of this. You see what I'm saying? Like, reading their text messages, being in contact with them, that keeps me grounded because I get to see where I came from. I get to see, like, oh, shit, I overcame that shit. That shit's still going on. It's not like, you know, so that makes you think twice on even thinking about doing anything, you know, so. I think that keeps you grounded. You want to be here for your kids. You want to be here for your woman. You want to be here for your mom, your dad. I like being here for people, so you can't really be there for the people like you want if you're in there. So that keeps you pretty much grounded. And then when you see the lane is open, you're kind of jumping in the lane, and you're like, oh, this shit's kind of open. They don't have this. They don't have, you know, they have a lot of people with money that's trying to come into the game and buy their way into the game and buy their brands and, you know, and things like that. But they don't have, like, no realness in the game. You know what I mean? Like, in a cannabis game, is lacking realness, you know, and it's lacking the real, like, you know, like, did you really stand on the corner? You know, like, I stood in front of West Boulevard and Hyde Park and had to really sell this shit for real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so did you really risk your life to sell this? And like I was saying on one interview, it's like, you know, you might be right there and you might got to pull out, you might just want a dub sack, but you didn't make your money all day, but you might even make $2,000 a day. But when you pull it out your pocket, that looked good to his naked eye. You know what I mean? Just to rob you for your $2,000 real quick that you had to pull out to give him change for his hand,
mm-hmm.
for his dub sack. So did you really have your life on the line and really, you know, be on Hyde Park in front of penny pinchers and, you know, where it's really going down at and really have to sell this week? Or did you just come out of nowhere and use your trust fund and get in the game, you know? So it's just a different aspect of the game that we're trying to bring back to it, that the people that's legacy and the people that's really, you know, been state to state. And imagine just going out of state. When you first go out of state, you don't even have a spot. You're hustling out of a room, hotel room, maybe like the Courtyard Marriott or something.
Hmm.
And these people are coming in from out of town, coming in your room to buy the weed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you got 30, 40 pounds in the weed and he's coming in there. Never seen him before. He ain't never seen you before. Y'all got to get the relationship started some kind of way.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, you know, it's different little things that started where you're like, whoa, you know, you're doing a $20,000, $30,000 transaction with this guy you never even met.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how your heart going to be beating on this time to see if this deal going to go through or what is he thinking on the next deal. Or, you know, it's definitely a level to this shit.
Okay. So what would you want people to know the most about prison, like people that are out here on the streets? Again, like when my ex used to talk to me about it, I was like, okay, I know that it was crazy, but I didn't know that this kind of stuff was going on. You know, like, what do you want people to keep in mind about what prisoners are going through in prison?
That everybody definitely needs like a mental evaluation after coming home from prison. Like, you have to be mentally sick. Like, you're living with another man in a bathroom. You feel what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. you know, so it's a lot going on. Let it be known that, you know, it depends on what level they're on too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, different levels. I was at a maximum security, so I can only speak from that. I've never been on a lower level. So I don't know what's going on a lower level. Right. You know? So at a maximum security prison, you're locked down a lot, you know, so you're dealing with a lot of other people's problems.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, you got the yard out of control. You're the one stepped on his shoe or got us into all this shit. You know what I mean? Like, I was fucking writing a letter when you did that. Or I was fucking trying to work on my case at the law library when you bumped into the dude from the Mexican Mafia. Now it's a big riot going on. You know what I mean? So you're dealing with a lot of other people's issues and you don't know what they're going through mentally because they got to deal with their 100 years differently or their life sentence or 50 years or whatever, their 5 days. Whatever it is that they got to deal with it on their own times on how they deal with their stuff, you know? So you're really doing a lot of other people's time. You feel what I'm saying? So you're not only doing your time, you have to be able to think for yourself and think for the next man too once you're like in a maximum security prison. I forgot to, I forgot to tell you. That's a good one, right? In prison, at maximum security prison, you're going to find out like, everybody's polite. And then you come out here into this real world and people are like bumping into you or not saying, excuse me. Or, you know, like I seen a guy at Walmart, like he just cut in line, but literally where I came from, like it's like a stab in your neck for cutting line. Like that's a total disrespect. Mm-hmm. You feel what I'm saying? So you get to see the level of all these dudes, like, I mean, the most toughest dudes, or he got 90s in there, he got 19 bodies, or the dude that killed everybody on, you know what I mean, whatever it is that he, you know, because you're dealing with everybody around the world, you're going to find out how polite he is. You know, he's going to say, hey, excuse me, sir, excuse me, man, what, you know what I mean? Like, the politeness and everybody standing in line, everything being in order, it's like a whole nother level. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like a whole nother level. If you're next and you're number four in line, that's what it is. That's law. You feel what I'm saying? So everything is law in there. You know, like a guy, they just called the other day, a guy got stabbed in the neck. He was drinking and he interrupted the dice game there outside shooting dice. So he got drunk and threw the dice on top of the roof for what reason. Now, mind me, this guy was like, a big GD in there. You know what I mean? He's been in there and running the GDs for years in there. And a sign like that of disrespect, no matter who you are, I don't care if you're Chapo Guzman, you know what I mean? One sign of disrespect, the yard is going to turn on you and you have to go now. Mm-hmm. And the only way you can go in there, if you're part of a gang, is you got to get stabbed or beat off the yard. You can't, it's not like, hey, just go and just leave. You feel what I'm saying? Like, you have to get beat off the yard. You have to, what they call it is a public demonstration. You feel what I'm saying? So it has to be a public demonstration so everyone can see what happened to you and that keeps everybody else in line. So the politeness is just at an all-time high in there because in 1 second, you can be a public demonstration. You know what I mean? And I thank God that I never was a public demonstration. I never got into, you know, anything like that where, because the table can turn on you too. It doesn't matter who you are. You know what I mean?
Okay. Biggest inspirations?
In prison or on the street?
Just in life in general?
I would say my biggest inspiration is just like, first one more. You feel what I'm saying? Like, I'm never satisfied. I don't care, like, what it is. It is. I want something bigger than that. You know what I mean? I want the next thing. So I'm always going to be inspired by seeing how much I can give and where I can be the most usage. It's like sometimes when I pray, I say, you know, like, God, where can you use me the most at? Or what can I do for you? I don't constantly just want to get on my knees and say, give me, give me, give me, give me, give me. You know, where is the usage at where you can use me the best at? And, you know, we can work together where you can use me to help more people. You feel what I'm saying? Or to do this or to speak to the next person that thinks that he's me. You know, the next 16-year-old that's just, you know, he wants a nice car or this or that or whatever it is that he's chasing. Them is the people that I'm trying to talk to. You know what I mean? That's why I'm like, you got the audience that I want to talk to. That's why I'm like, I got to make it down there. Because I can be on fucking oxygen, and I can be on all that. Is it talking to my audience? Mm-hmm. Is it talking to my hood? Is it talking to the people that I grew up with? Can they hear me? You know what I mean? Like, if they can't hear me, it's doing no use. You feel me?
That part. And so they hear you. And so just so we're clear on the message, you want them to know.
just follow your dreams. Don't chase them. You know what I mean? Like, just really, really follow them. Like, really know what you want to do. And really, right. like, just know that you can do anything you put your mind to. Like, anything that you set out in your brain and can say that you can do it, you actually can do it. You feel what I'm saying? Like, there's no... It's no stopping you. You can only stop you. You feel what I'm saying? Like, if you get up and tie your shoes up and say, this is what I want to do, that shit gonna happen. You feel what I'm saying? Like, it's gonna happen. So just do you, be you, and master being you. You know, attack everything that you're trying to do. Like, attack it.
Definitely. I guess we'll close out on this. Somebody that, you know, two people, J. Cole and Nipsey Hussle, two people that showed me, like, okay, if you have a plan and you stick to it, like, it could definitely happen for sure, you know? And how does it feel for you personally, you know, when you left L.A., Nipsey Hussle was alive, you know?
Yeah. And we had just went and got something to eat. We got something to eat at Bayou Grill.
Bayou Grill,
so we sat there for about 2 hours. But yeah, it was like, damn, you took off right when I left. You feel what I'm saying? Like, it was crazy. Mm-hmm. You feel what I'm saying? Like, I mean, you took off before I left, but you really became him. You feel what I'm saying?
During like, that
you,
2010 you, early. Yeah, yeah.
You know, he was going through the stages of, you know, the bitch you broke. And mm-hmm. This thing, like the last one was the, I was going to go there to where he shot the video on Slauson and Rick Ross didn't come down. And that's when he was going to maybe sign with Maybach at the time.
With the song with Stally?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was during that stage right before I left. You feel what I'm saying? So, mm-hmm. you know, like people would come in town, they want to do a verse with Nip. And sometimes he don't even like the verse. You know what I mean? Sometimes I had to beg Nip to do the song because they'd already paid Nip. You feel what I'm saying? Like, there's people that's already has paid Netflix money to do a song. You're like, man, that shit whack. I don't want to do that shit. I'm like, bro, that's why people, I do business with them out of town. You feel what I'm saying? So it's like, it was just to see him just explode like that. And then just, you know, when he bought the parking lot, you know what I mean? Like, that was just, it was just huge shit he was doing. And I was just very, very proud. I wasn't mad I couldn't be here. And I missed a lot of the whole little movement. But, never really made the city proud. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you really had people crying in the day room at his funeral, like grown men. Like, it was serious. Like, the whole prison, like, did a whole thing. It was something like I've never seen before.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Do you think that, like, L.A. will ever get away from this, like, and, you know, okay, yeah, the outside forces, but it's still the Black person that's doing the act, you know? Like, right. Do you think will ever get beyond this, like...
They said we're the new KKK.
I need the KKK. Killing
all the Black people. You know what I mean? Like, we're killing more than the Black people. They said they said the list of name of the Blacks that the KKK killed, they said we get way... I mean, the number is just astronomical how many Blacks that we're killing. You know, so... I mean, I pray that it changes. You know what I mean? But... every generation is the drugs are getting different and things are getting different. And you have to realize, like, you know, like they're not thinking this out. Like these young kids are not thinking this out. So you got to be aware and consciousness of everything that they're doing. And it's sad that it's like that, but it is. And we just got to pray for change because you did the marching, you did the Black Lives Matter. I think we did all we can do. You know what I mean? Like, everyone got together.
We ain't start shooting back yet, though. Just saying.
You know what I mean?
I'm just kidding.
So, it's just out of control, and we just got to pray for change.
Definitely. And plant seeds, too, and make sure we highlight in people that are trying to do that work. But, Corvain, like, yeah. It's been my pleasure. Is there any... else you want the people to know or keep in mind or
just look at, you know, keep up with what's going on, follow the page, follow 40tons.co. You feel what I'm saying? See the upcoming events that we're gonna have going on, and you follow the 40 Tons brand on IG and Corvain Cooper, and then we're gonna keep you up to date what we're doing. We're gonna let you know we're doing it. Come out and support, and we're here for the community. We're here.
Definitely. And so, again, go to the 40 Tons brand page and website, and people could purchase some merch. Yeah. And again, if you want to break down like how that is helping the prison, folks in prison.
If you just buy a regular 40 Tons hat, just a percentage of it goes to it. But if you buy an actual shirt of the prisoner, all the proceeds go straight to the prisoner's books. And we'll show you the day that we put it on their books. And we're going to JPAM or whatever it is, however we get the money to them. That's what we're going to do. And all proceeds, every single dollar, goes straight to the prisoner.
Definitely, for sure.
And we did, and we used Nip's picture from the marathon and put every prisoner's picture on there with the weed stuff in the back. Mm-hmm. So we can, you know, incorporate Nip into it too, so he can have love too.
Definitely. So, do you still have your GoFundMe still?
Yeah, but it's kind of slowed down. It's like they're out there to feel it. I'm like, what are you slowing down for?
Yeah, you know what I mean? They think you're like, popping.
Yeah, I'm like, well, I'm not popping. Like, what are you stopping? Like, okay. GoFundMe now. Like, stop. You
okay,
know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
Press the link. Yeah.
You know, sustainability is important. You know what I'm saying? And people who want to donate to causes, Black people, you can donate directly to them. You know what I'm saying? If you want
to. There's no middleman. You just go straight to the plug. You just press the button, you donate, because the only way that I can do the work that I'm doing mm-hmm. is if you GoFundMe.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Like, if you don't GoFundMe, then it's like, man, now I'm at Walmart for 8, 9, 10 hours. Mm-mm. You know what I mean? So those are places that want to hire you. So now you're there for 10 hours. What work can you do there?
Right.
You know, what good work can you do in the community there? So it's for the work of the reentry, of pressing the message and helping the people.
Definitely. Yeah. So, yes, support Corvain's reentry. He's 6 months out, doing amazing work. Go to 40 Tons brand, their website and Instagram page. And yeah, I mean, I'm super excited to see the work that yourself, 40 Tons, Miss Evelyn, everyone involved, you know, a couple years, it's going to be crazy for sure. Even shit, by the end of the year.
Yeah, it's going to be dope.
Definitely. Well, thanks again. I really appreciate it. And follow Corvain Cooper on Instagram at Corvain Cooper. Yeah.
Right. Corvain Cooper by itself. Yeah.
Oh, wait, what'd you say?
No, Corvain Cooper by itself. That's good.
Okay. All right. Cool. Sweet.
Yeah. All right. Like this episode?
Leave a review and stay up to date on new episodes by subscribing to Sloss and Girl Speaks. And follow Sloss and Girl on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook.